Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. Tonight, Governor John Kasich takes his State of the State address on the road again, this time to Medina, Ohio, which is just south of Cleveland. This is the governor's fourth State of the State address, and the state of the state of Ohio likely will decide whether voters give John Kasich a second term in November. So what exactly is the state of our state? We'll try to answer that question this morning as we preview the governor's address. We'll also talk about rising support for gay marriage, medical marijuana. We'll talk about fracking in state parks, jobs in southeast Ohio. Joining us, three reporters who cover the State House and all that goes on there. Jackie Borchard from the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Jackie, welcome.
Hey, thanks.
Joe Ingles from Ohio Public Radio.
Nice to be here.
And Chrissy Thompson from the Cincinnati Inquirer.
Thanks for having me.
Our phone number, 292-8513. What is the state of the state of Ohio in your mind? Give us a call, 292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Jackie, let's start with you. If you were to write a completely nonpartisan, impartial speech, not trying to tout your accomplishments, not trying to knock your opponent, what would be your assessment of the state of Ohio right now?
Well, I think first of all, you're not going to see a completely nonpartisan accomplishment touting free speech tonight. I feel like that's what the governor does in his day of the state is to say, you know, these are the things that my administration has done. This is the track that Ohio is on, and this is where we are going. And maybe add a couple things in there that the governor still wants to do to keep going on that track. But I think what we're seeing, and we're seeing it play out in the politics, but also when you talk just to regular people, is that there are different, vastly different feelings of how Ohio is doing. You know, if you talk to someone who was, you know, unemployed during the recession, has maybe had two or three jobs since then, still cannot find permanent full-time work, the state of Ohio is not good. But then again, for every it seems like for every person like that, you have someone who, you know, may have, you know, hit some setbacks in the recession, but has since come back and business is better. Their home values are better. And they'll tell you that things are much better now. So I think it still very much is a personal thing that people feel. And that's going to be the challenge for the governor tonight, is telling both sides of that story without conceding that it's his fault one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. Chrissy Thompson, does it vary geographically? You monitor, obviously, southwest Ohio and the Cincinnati area. Columbus seems to be doing probably better than certainly northeast Ohio, which is still very reliant on manufacturing. How much does the state of the state vary based on what part of the state you live in?
That's a very good point. I mean, I think specifically of the Ormet situation, you know, several hundred people losing their job, still just a drop in the bucket in the overall state economy. But for those people, this is crisis time. And that's what happens, I think, as voters consider how has our state done under John Kasich. They think of their personal situation. They look around their community, and they make a decision based on that.
Ormet Corporation is the aluminum plant down in southeast Ohio, right along the Ohio River, that closed in a bit of a controversy over electric bills. Joe Ingles, Quinnipiac last week said they had a bunch of numbers, but the one that stuck out at me was voter satisfaction. In 2014, 56% of Ohioans believe that they are satisfied, either greatly or somewhat satisfied, with how things are going right now. That compares to when John Kasich took office of 32%. So this poll shows that Ohioans, at least on the right track, wrong track number, most Ohioans think we're on the right track.
Yeah, except if you look in some of those poll numbers in that very same poll, you see that this is just playing the devil's advocate with the numbers. Most of the people who were surveyed in that poll say they don't feel like John Kasich understands where they are, what their situation is. There is not a widespread love in those numbers for John Kasich's policies. And you've also got in that same poll 70% of those people saying, we don't know who Ed Fitzgerald is. He's not well known. So there are a lot of things in that poll that play into this election, just other than that number. But yeah, I think that, you know, honestly, we're not going through a national recession right now like we were 4 years ago. So we're not hearing that on a national basis. And let's face it, you know, this time in the race back then, If you looked at former Governor Strickland's numbers, they were pretty good. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot can change in the span of a few months. And when you have a $9 million war chest, campaign war chest, that can make a difference.
Yeah, the margin is in the hypothetical. Well, it's not hypothetical anymore. But John Kasich has a 5-point lead over Ed Fitzgerald, the Democratic candidate right now. Ted Strickland had a 5-point lead over John Kasich exactly 4 years ago. So, but a lot can happen. And the right track, wrong track number was going in the wrong direction for Ted Strickland, where on John Kasich's part, it looks like it's going okay.
And I think that Joe touched on a really important point in that it's not, the sense of how are we doing as a state is not just about what's happening in the state. And it's the national conversation of the economy and issues that also kind of, you know, paint people's view of how things are going.
It is very ironic that the Democrats 2 years ago, Chrissy Thompson, when Barack Obama was trying to win the state, everything was going great. And now it's 2 years later, it's perhaps a little, it's not that much different than it was in 2012. And now the Democrats are saying we're not doing as well.
That's right. They do have one point in that much of our state's recovery of the first few years after the recession was ahead of the pace across the country. In large part because of the stimulus package and the investment in manufacturing and the auto industry. And our state's, economic improvement has sort of flattened out since then. Obviously, Democrats can tout those numbers and say we should be doing better. Things have stagnated. You know, our first recovery was because of Barack Obama, and what's going on right now is because of John Kasich. But that's not totally fair either, because there are other numbers showing that we are continuing to improve, and it just depends on what number you look at, what day.
Yeah, the state's unemployment rate stands at 7.2%. That's 2 points lower than it was when John Kasich took office, but it's now above the national average, which is about 6.5%. We're talking with State House reporters, Ohio reporters, about the governor's State of the State address tonight here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. Join the conversation, 292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're also on Twitter and Facebook if you want to join us that way. Let's get to what we can expect to hear as far as policy initiatives. Joe Ingles, do you see any major policy initiatives coming out of tonight's address?
Well, I think, first of all, we're going to hear Governor Kasich talk about how Jobs Ohio is working. Every, job that's coming into Ohio these days, he makes a link with Jobs Ohio. It's very hard for reporters to actually say yes or no that it is Jobs Ohio that is helping bring these jobs, because we don't have all of the information we need many times to make that decision on a critical basis. But I think we'll hear that from him. I also think we're going to hear a lot about, he's got this idea of trying to take middle schoolers and tie them to vocational education so that maybe they can learn a skill with the hopes of getting a job. And I think that's going to be big, because that if you could get more kids engaged at that level, it could help with the state's dropout rate. And I think we're going to hear him talk about streamlining schools again and increasing quality in schools. He'll probably talk about that.
Jackie, he has mentioned that it might have been a little bit of a slip, but he called deregulating schools, giving schools more freedom to get away from state rules. And it almost sounds like he was going backwards on the whole standardized testing and giving teachers more freedom. Might we hear something on that tonight?
I'm not sure, because, when he talked about that, everyone kind of said the same thing. So, well, what does that mean? What does deregulation mean? And especially coming from an administration that has, pushed some pretty regulatory items, notably the third grade reading guarantee, which a lot of schools around the state say is burdensome, and requiring them to tap new resources, and basically that's the push for more early intervention in literacy and reading instruction, so that by the time a student reaches the end of third grade, they're reading at grade level, and if they're not, they can't be promoted to fourth grade. And so it is interesting to have that proposal be so in the forefront of the Kasich administration, and then to say, well, we want to deregulate some things. So I don't think we're going to see the third grade reading guarantee go away. I don't think that we're going to see some new things probably in vocational education, which most you would assume would be more regulations, more rules that schools have to follow. I think what he's talking about here are smaller reporting requirements or, you know, following a certain, you know, chain of command, more bureaucratic type processes, things that, you know, aren't seen perhaps every day. And I don't know if we'll hear about those specifically tonight or if that's, you know, something that will be released in part of what he calls the mid-biennial budget review, which is he has done now. This will be his second one. It's basically a slew of policy changes that he introduces after the State of the State in an off-budget year. And I think we'll hear more about it then. I don't think it'll be too prominent tonight.
Speaking of the budget review, we had a slight tax decrease. Income tax decrease in the budget that went into effect in January. Chrissy Thompson, might we see another proposal for a tax increase, income tax decrease? I mean, the governor has said he wants to lower the income tax in Ohio. He sees it as a barrier to growth in the state. Might he suggest another income tax cut in this speech?
I think so. I mean, he's been talking for the last 9 months about wanting to get the top income tax bracket under 5%. So I imagine we'll see that. The thing with John Kasich is what does he actually talk about during the speech? I imagine he'll mention this. It's the question is how many of these are going to be clear policy rollouts and how many of them are going to be just talking points that he expounds upon, anecdotes he shares. He doesn't like using a teleprompter, things like that, as we know. So Jackie was just mentioning the mid-biennium review. That's when we'll see officially, you know, what the administration's policies are written down on paper. So I think we'll see that. He likes to talk also about the rainy day fund. He'll tout that it's at $1.5 billion. They expect to keep it that way. And then if there's any more of a surplus, it'll turn into a tax cut. He'll talk about he likes to talk about 170,000 private sector jobs that have increased in his time as governor. And the interesting thing about that is that he chooses to focus on these non-government jobs. But the full number of jobs we've actually seen increase in the economy in his term is only 60,000 if you include the government jobs. So he'll talk about a couple of his favorite things for sure. And the tax cuts are one of them.
Jackie Borchardt, Ed Fitzgerald on Friday gave his State of the State, I guess, preemptive news conference. What is the Democratic challenger for governor? What is his view of the State of the State, and what might he focus on after tonight's address?
Well, it's interesting because after Ed Fitzgerald met with reporters in Columbus, he then embarked on his own State of the State tour over the weekend, which I think was a pretty smart move. Most Ohioans, I think, aren't going to watch the State of the State tonight, but there's probably a good chance that they might have heard that another candidate was in their hometown, and so they decided to go out and hear, or they read in the paper or something like that. I think it's interesting to think of preempting an address that you don't know all the details. Like we've all been saying here, we don't know exactly what's going to be in this new package of policies, but education and cuts to local governments are still at the forefront of Democrats' agendas. And number one is the economy. And it gets back to that first question that we were talking about is, you know, how do you feel the economy is doing in Ohio? And for a lot of people, it's not very good. And so they are going to hammer that point home that, you know, for every time John Kasich says that Ohio is better and greater than it was before, it's not. And here's why.
All right. It is 20 minutes after 10 o'clock. When we come back on All Sides with Ann Fisher, we'll talk about the latest Quinnipiac University poll, interesting numbers with regards to gay marriage and medical marijuana, when All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News. Thank you. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We're talking about what's in the news, what is going to be in the news later this week with a panel of State House reporters, Joe Ingles from Ohio Public Radio, Jackie Borchard from the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and Chrissy Thompson from the Cincinnati Inquirer. Quinnipiac University released, the final portion of their poll this morning, and it focused on social issues. Some interesting numbers. Let's start first with gay marriage, because gay marriage could become a bigger issue as the year goes on if it gets on the ballot in November. A little backtrack, in 2004, Ohio voters overwhelmingly voted for a constitutional ban on gay marriage. And since that time, supporters of gay marriage have been trying to figure out when would be the best time to try to overturn that ban. Well, Quinnipiac University this morning in its poll shows that 50% and even 50% of Ohioans support same-sex marriage, while 44% oppose it. That's up a bit from last year, where it was pretty much dead even down the middle. And, of course, it's much better as far as supporters of gay marriage are concerned than it was in 2004. Joe Ingles, 50 to 44. That still seems a little too close to call in polling language for supporters to go on the ballot this fall. Am I wrong on that one?
No. Here's the situation we have in Ohio right now. We have our gay rights advocates are split. We have one group that says, hey, let's educate everyone and maybe think about 2016 putting it on the ballot. We have another group that says, hey, we've got the numbers right now. Let's put it on the ballot. And they're collecting signatures to put it on the ballot with the intentions of this fall. Now, the problem you have is, yes, you do have, according to this, a majority of Ohioans who say, yes, we want gay marriage in Ohio. But if you break out those numbers and look at where the support is, the support is largest with young people and Democrats. The opposition is overwhelming with older people and Republicans. And we know that the hardest time to get Democrats and get young people out to vote is a midterm election. That's a hard time for them. And most Democrats, I think, who work would admit that. So they would have to mobilize a large number of their voters to get out in the midterm election to vote on this issue. And that takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of money. And that's where the split comes, because the group that wants to hold back and not do it right now is saying, you know what? If we push forward and we lose this election, then it's going to be a while before we can come back with this.
Well, why would it be a while? Why not put it on the ballot in 2014? And I mean, that's the core of the we can't go back again in 2016. Why not try it both times, Jackie?
Well, I think the thought there is, like Joe said, it takes a lot to mobilize campaigns on either side. And if the opposition to a same-sex marriage amendment is so great that it wins, chances are in 2 years it's going to be just as strong. And the losers are, you know, going to be weakened by that blow. Yeah. So just speaking from purely political standpoint, there's that. And also, I think it sends a message then to the rest of the country that Ohio's not ready for this. And then you don't have the national support, because the two pro-gay marriage camps that are divided on the 2014 or 2016, the difference is Freedom Ohio, the grassroots Ohio group, doesn't have the cash. Mm-hmm. And the other coalition, the Why Marriage Matters Ohio, which is Human Rights Campaign, ACLU, a national freedom to marry group that's worked with other states, they do have national polling power in getting more contributions and being able to, you know, parachute people in to help with the campaign here. So there's a lot of factors at work, but like Joe said, it's expensive. And I think the last campaign finance report showed about $20,000+ in the bank for the Ohio group.
Yep. I think it was $23,000. They say they need at least $12 million to run a campaign. They say they have the signatures. They have about 650,000 signatures. They need 385, and a lot of those won't get validated, right? So, but they think that's about a right number. But they think they need $12 million, and they have zero national support. Mm-hmm. So the question is, where are they going to get $12 million on an Ohio-only effort?
So without the money, then you're counting on your electorate showing up and thinking that that is an issue worthy of voting on. And like Joe said, in an off year, it's hard to get Democrats and younger people. And the poll showed that's where the support is highest.
And conceivably, in 2016, you're going to have your Democratic nominee for president, whoever it is, touting marriage equality as one of the major platforms of the Democratic Party, and, you know, sort of they can ride on those coattails. So that's the politics of it, Chrissy Thompson. What about the attitudes? It's only been 10 years since it was 60-40 in favor of banning gay marriage in Ohio. Why the dramatic switch in just 10 years?
Well, I think we're seeing this around the country, that, you know, kind of the attitude is shifting in general toward accepting this as maybe not something that you personally want to do, but that everyone, I think polls show that, 85% of people say that they know someone who would be affected by this law. So saying, you know, I think that my cousin or my friend should have the right to marry. Whether I want that happening in my church or not is a different question. So we're seeing a lot of that. You know, the two questions are which poll are we really going to believe? Because the Freedom to Marry Ohio group, as Jackie was saying, has a poll that shows that I think 53% of Ohioans would support their amendment, which says that you should be allowed to marry in Ohio, but religious institutions can they can say they don't want to perform a marriage and they don't want to recognize a marriage. And they say if people know that that's what the amendment says, they're going to vote for it because they want that religious exemption. But the national groups say, no, that's too specific. People need to know or need to feel 100% that they want to legalize gay marriage, period, in order to come out and vote for this. So the question is, you know, when you bring up attitudes, is how at what point are you going to throw your hat in the ring, and how specific are these Ohio voters going to be?
And there still could be a court. There is a court challenge. It's working its way slowly through the courts to the Ohio ban, which may make much of this moot if a court challenge succeeds in overturning the ban in the next couple of years.
Yeah, we have three. Mm-hmm. We have that court challenge down in Chrissy's neck of the woods with the death certificates. That's in appeal right now. But basically, as it stands, it says that gay marriages must be recognized. We also have this lawsuit out there on birth certificates, a couple with an adopted child or adopted children. I can't remember. They're suing over the right on birth certificates to have both parents' name put on there. And then recently, we have another court suit that's been entered into this fray, trying to get basically the a marriage that's performed elsewhere acknowledged here for the Affordable Care Act. This person from Cleveland says, you know, he has a spouse and a daughter, and he says he wanted the family plan that he used to have before the Affordable Care Act went into place. Well, now he has to go to the marketplace. When he goes to the marketplace, because Ohio's law, he can't have that family affordable care plan. It costs him more money. Now, you know, it's interesting because we've seen in federal courts around the country that when it involves a federal issue like that, the courts have been generally siding with the feds and saying, you know, okay, well, go ahead with this and go ahead with that. So piecemeal, they could make some headway with this.
Speaking of changing attitudes, 76% of Ohioans now support medical marijuana. I mean, that's a big number. 76% support medical marijuana. But if you think about it, that kind of makes sense, because here are folks who are in pain, perhaps, you know, undergoing cancer treatments or have medical issues, and this is a drug that can relieve their suffering. Everyone's going to be in favor of that if it's controlled. The number that struck me, though, was 51% of Ohioans basically support recreational use of marijuana in small amounts. So basically, they support 51% of Ohioans in this Quinnipiac poll say they support what's going on in Colorado. Chrissy Thompson, does that surprise you?
It does a little bit. I think that the thing that always pops into my mind when any sort of marijuana poll question comes up is whether the groups that actually want to get this on the ballot are going to be able to put together the signatures to get it on the ballot. It costs a lot of money, as we've discussed, and they have not been very organized. So, I was a little surprised about the personal use I don't remember seeing a poll like that in the past, so I'm not sure. I used to live in Michigan where we voted on this issue, but so I'm very familiar with medical marijuana.
What did Michigan folks do with this?
I believe we approved medical marijuana.
Medical marijuana, yes. But not recreational.
No, we don't
only
have
Washington
like,
and Colorado.
We don't have little, you know, places where you can go and get marijuana.
With Girl Scouts selling cookies outside.
Very smart of that
brilliant
Girl Scout.
Brilliant move.
Well, there's 20 states have medical marijuana programs, and I think that over time, seeing how those programs have worked in states and not led to, you know, mass marijuana use, you know, rampant marijuana abuse, I think has led a lot of people to say, hey, actually, you know, that's not such a bad idea. The 51% did surprise me, especially when you go a little bit deeper in the poll, and 55% of those polled said they've never even tried marijuana. So even though you've got a large group of people saying I've never even done it, they're totally, you know, fine with having small amounts. And I do think it depends on that people have seen what's happened in Colorado. And again, the same thing, the sky hasn't fallen. But Kirstie's right. The key point for Ohio voters in all this is, are they even going to have a chance to vote for real on this? And, I don't think they are this year.
You don't think. Is it your prediction that the Republican-controlled legislature is not going to legalize recreational use of marijuana? Is that what you're saying?
You know, they maybe in the lame duck. I mean, there have been bills introduced this session and the last. There's been bills introduced every session for the last, you know, 6 years or so. And they haven't gone anywhere. And, you know, I think there are some pretty libertarian, you know, leaning Republican members of the House and Senate, but there's no way.
So this brings up a very interesting point. You say libertarian leaning members, right? So I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that Charlie Earle, for instance,
the candidate for governor, for libertarian candidate,
correct,
for governor,
is in favor of legalizing marijuana.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And a few other things, like gay marriage, right? Mm-hmm. A few other things that traditionally alienate, you know, Tea Party members, right?
Some. I mean, I think it comes down to the religious versus
That's
libertarian
correct.
Conservative.
There are different groups of Tea Parties, right? Yeah. So Democrats have been bringing up, especially last week when Charlie Earle was left out of the Quinnipiac gubernatorial poll, that he is, they hope and predict that he will draw 5-7% of the vote and from Tea Party members who are upset with John Kasich about Medicaid. So will those people be so upset about Medicaid that they vote for someone who is in favor of legalizing marijuana, for instance? I am not sure what to think on that issue, honestly.
I get the idea that this poll shows that the marijuana is not that big a deal in Ohio voters' mind. If 76% yes, say, okay, yeah, if you get a prescription, go ahead and take it. And 51% say, yeah, if you want to use a little bit, okay. Joe Ingles, when you hear of all the stories about heroin addiction and painkiller addiction and opiate abuse and pill mills and meth labs, you wonder if marijuana is just like, yeah, whatever. You know, let's focus on the really bad stuff. And marijuana, you can argue bad or good, but or not so bad and bad. Is it just that marijuana is kind of whatever now?
Yeah, I think you're hitting on something. I think that there is a sentiment that marijuana, you know, when you have all these other drug problems, marijuana is just, you know, a small thing. It's not something that's considered on par with heroin, cocaine, meth, whatever. So I think you've got that. But I also think, you know, when you're looking at, does this issue drive people to vote? And I would love to see those numbers drill down a little bit more, because I don't think that people are going to vote on medical marijuana as far as a candidate for governor. Maybe they will. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I don't know everything, but I just don't hear that issue being a top issue. Similarly, with women's issues, you know, we hear polls on abortion, but I don't hear a lot of people saying, I'm going to vote on governor because of this one issue. I think what they look at is overall how they feel about someone, and they feel like they're not going to agree with the candidate that they support all of the time, but they can agree with them most of the time. And how many times, Mike, you've been a reporter for many years, how many times have we gone out around the election time and someone says, you know what, I really like Ron Paul, but I think I'm going to vote for, you know, this guy over here because I want my vote to count. Mm-hmm. And that's what they always say. I want my vote to count. Mm-hmm. So I think people are willing to compromise. So all these numbers that we're spouting out here today, I think we have to take them with a grain of salt. Mm-hmm.
We're talking about state issues with our panel of reporters here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson. We're looking at state politics. State of the State is tonight. Governor John Kasich gives his address, but also some other issues that are in the news as well. You're welcome to join our conversation, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Joe Engels mentioned the abortion issue, and that is an issue that can galvanize, especially among the anti-abortion, on both sides, I guess. The far abortion rights advocates and the hard anti-abortion advocates can drive people to the polls. Quinnipiac shows that 53% of Ohioans say it should be legal in some form, and 43% say it should be legal in some form. That's pretty much, Jackie Borchardt, where we have been for several years now.
Yeah, the needle really hasn't moved there. And even in the last poll that Quinnipiac did on that, because they drill down further into, do you approve or disapprove of abortion in all cases or in most cases? And those numbers even haven't moved that much, which, you know, goes against some of the other polls that are out there. But it also, I think, reflects what Joe has said, is that it's not an issue that really pushes people to the polls as much as some of the other things.
But Chrissy Thompson, Ed Fitzgerald, and Democrats are using this issue to push people to the polls in November. They're trying to point out the abortion restrictions that have been passed during John Kasich's term.
That's right. The two groups I see Ed Fitzgerald trying to galvanize to get to the polls are women and union members. So you hear him talk a lot about abortion, about these abortion restrictions that the legislature passed in the last budget that John Kasich signed this summer. He chose Sharon Neuhart as his running mate. She is a very active in abortion rights movement for the past couple of decades. She's a woman. You hear also the other issue that they continue to bring up is legislature pass right to work in lame duck this year, and will John Kasich sign it?
And, you know, the one thing I hear when I hear the Democrats talking about these issues, I don't hear them just talking about abortion. I hear them talking about clumping that in a women's rights issue, which
right.
We don't have the numbers to know what the impact of that's going to be. But they also talk about equal pay for equal work. They talk about contraception. Now, you got to remember, one of these bills took funding away from one of the bills that passed into law took funding away from Planned Parenthood, federal funding. And a lot of people, it was for contraception. A lot of people see contraception entirely a separate thing from abortion, mm-hmm. and they feel very differently about that. And you're looking at, the Democrats tying all these issues together under one big umbrella, and we don't know what impact that's going to have.
That's right. They avoid the word abortion.
Yeah. Women's health is what they call
that's
it.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and unless we reporters, you know, our job is right to talk mm-hmm. about what the real issues are, so we'll try to get them to talk about abortion. But they avoid it at all costs. They never use it.
Mm-hmm.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We're speaking with State House reporters about the news that is happening in Ohio this week. And when we come back, we'll talk about fracking and aluminum production in southern and eastern Ohio. That's when All Sides continues here on 89.7 NPR News. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We're speaking with a panel of State House reporters about what's going on in the news in the state of Ohio this week. The idea of fracking in state parks and the suspected cozy relationship between regulators and natural gas drillers recently made headlines. Liberal groups uncovered and released a 2012 memo that describes a plan by the Ohio Department of Natural Resources to sell the idea of drilling for natural gas in state parks. The plan identifies potential supporters and potential opponents. It also went to top officials in the governor's office. The problem, critics say, is that ODNR regulates oil and natural gas drilling, and they argue should not be involved in selling drilling in state parks. Christy Thompson, this is legal. There was a bill that was passed by the legislature and signed by the governor last year, I believe, or 2011, that said you can drill and you can frack on state land. So this could happen. It's just the marketing of it has caused controversy.
That's right. And you know, the governor's administration is going to continue to say, we chose not to do this, we chose not to do this, we chose not to do this. However, it's 2014. So, you know, there is, for a lot of people, this is an ethical issue. Fracking continues to be an ethical issue, and it is viewed suspiciously from you know, Democrats who end up supporting some of the economic development that fracking brings to Ohio. So when they say you're a regulator, you need to have an arm's length approach to this. You know, there are people who really feel that very strongly.
I think that's what critics are pouncing on is not necessarily the idea of, well, of course, they're opposed to fracking in state parks, but the idea of this regulator being, you know, cooperating with an industry they're supposed to be basically the umpire of.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think that kind of ignores the fact that every state agency and every, you know, just even organization, before they get to do something big that's going to generate news, they're going to get together and come up with some sort of communications plan, some sort of rough idea of these are the questions that are going to be asked. These are, you know, how we should answer them and best steps moving forward. I think this situation shows that maybe it was a little too close, the planning on that plan. But like Chrissy said, the plan was never implemented. And the drilling never happened either. The governor left those spots on that board open. All the deadlines passed to go ahead and do it. And I think in that case, actions speak louder than words.
Fracking in state parks, it doesn't sound like it's going to happen anytime soon. One, because of the political opposition to it, Joe Ingles, but also they probably don't need to frack on state land right now because there's plenty of other land out there in eastern Ohio that they can they have leases on and yep. options for and things like that.
Absolutely. If you look at the deeds and what's happening in eastern Ohio over that Marcellus Shale, we're seeing a whole lot of private private negotiations, sales, and they're making headway there. So I think that you're absolutely right. They don't need to go to the state parks now. But you know what this does do is open the door for questions. And the more we see situations like in West Virginia recently, where the water was contaminated, where it was so bad off that people couldn't drink it, it was a real disaster. And the more we see that coming close to the election, I think we're going to see environmentalists saying, hey, do you want someone who's cozy with the industry, you know, out there making decisions and, by the way, trying to entice that industry to come here? Do you want them wearing both hats? And I think that's where we'll see that issue go. But again, is that the issue that people are going to pay attention to when they make a decision for governor?
Folks in eastern Ohio are certainly just paying attention to the jobs that, mm-hmm. that it's generating. Exactly. It's been a little bit under expectations, but it still has been, for many folks in the eastern part of the state, it's been good news.
And then they feel like they've been ignored for so long as far as economic development and growth that even now that we're still in the early stages of what's expected to be a big boom, they're already feeling those effects and feeling the effects of maybe not getting a direct job, but the effect of having more people just working in general in your community, of attending your restaurants and shopping in your stores and, you know, filling up at your gas stations. So from all I've heard, that's a very, very positive thing. And the fracking, if you're allowing it on your land and it's bringing you income, it's kind of hard to say no.
I think the bigger thing that we'll hear about this year on an ongoing basis related to fracking is, of course, the governor's continued attempts to get a severance tax. And if you look at it that way, a lot of the opposition has been from the oil and gas companies that he's trying to recruit, right? So that is another kind of pushback to some of this, how are you in bed with the companies that you're trying to regulate, right? The urgency there from liberals' perspective, and I think the governor would agree with this to an extent, is these companies are coming here. A lot of times they're bringing people from out of state for these jobs because we don't have people who are quite skilled enough for them. And also, if fracking dries up, what are we going to do with Eastern Ohio again? And there's revenue that could come from this tax to be put into workforce development type things. So that I think we'll hear about on a longer term. Probably this will keep coming up. There'll be continued calls for investigations and things like that. But really, that is probably the bigger issue for 2014 related to fracking.
Where does the fracking tax stand right now? The governor wanted at one point, what he wanted, 3 or 4% tax on frackers, and then they compromised where it was down to 1 or 2%, and they offset some other taxes. That didn't go anywhere. Is it just dead right now in the legislature?
I don't think so. I think it's percolating in the legislature. I think the governor still wants more. He said it. He says he still wants a higher severance tax, and I think he'll go after it because he usually does when he says that kind of thing. I think there are some lawmakers who would quite frankly agree with him. But I also think there are lawmakers who really don't want to do anything that's going to step on that industry's toes. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're seeing at play right now. And you got to remember, it's 2014. Yeah. We keep saying that, mm-hmm. but that's the key here. Because in 2015, when no one has to answer to voters, can they sneak something through that they couldn't do now?
Well, and those lawmakers also don't want to do anything that would label them as raising taxes, mm-hmm. which a severance tax increase would do. So I think we will see yet another revision of this proposal from the governor, and with some help from the Ohio House. And we will see an increase, because if you're going to cut income tax rates, like the governor has said over and over again he wants to do, you have to make up mm-hmm. that revenue loss either by spending less or generating more revenue. And Ohio is there's a couple ways you can do that. Sales tax, you can increase sales tax, which is what they did last year. Or you can find new revenue. And if for the state of Ohio, that can come in the instance of higher severance taxes.
292-8513 is our phone number. If you'd like to join our conversation, we're talking about issues in the news in the state of Ohio here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. 292-8513 is our phone number. AllSides@WOSU.org is our email address. You can also find us on Twitter and on Facebook, and you can catch us online at WOSU.org. Another issue, we alluded to it briefly earlier in the program, that's of interest in Eastern Ohio, and that's Ormet Corporation. Ormet Corporation is an aluminum plant. It employed 700 people. It's right along the Ohio River in Hannibal, Ohio. It shut down last fall after the PUCO, the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, declined to give it a big break on its electric bill. They said that caused them to go out of business, 700 people out of work. The company, its executives, the employees all point fingers at John Kasich, saying he didn't do enough to make this work. Chrissy Thompson, how much blame is on government? How much blame is on just the economy and the market for aluminum, which has dropped in recent years?
I mean, obviously, it just depends on who you ask in this situation. And this is going to be something that we will hear about on a weekly basis through the election, for sure.
Democrats are going to pounce on this as a major job loss, that, and they're going to try to pin it on John Kasich.
Absolutely. Ed Fitzgerald has already been down to meet with those workers twice. I'm sure they've got a lot of good campaign footage for that. I don't mean to make a joke about it. This is very serious for those people, but it is going to be a campaign issue one way or another. So,
will it stick? Will it resonate? First of all, Southeastern Ohio, they tend to lean conservative, but they also, there's been big union jobs down there, and Ted Strickland's district is down there. So it's kind of a mix of folks down there, but generally conservative. Will it be enough to cost John Kasich votes in Southeastern Ohio?
Well, you got to remember, there's another issue in southeastern Ohio that's huge, and that is the drug problem. The drug problem with the pill mill clinics, so that kind of thing was out of hand. And Governor Kasich has shut down some of these pill mills. He's going in there with, some people in tow that have been able to put these doctors out of business, put them behind bars. I use the word doctors very loosely there. But, you know, they have made some headway there. So there are some people in southeast Ohio who look at that issue and say, hey, you know, he's doing what we want. So I don't know how much this will be. I think politically this has the impact. Remember back when Governor Strickland and Governor Kasich were running 4 years ago, NCR had just moved out. And you had Governor Kasich saying, well, where were you, Ted Strickland, when all this was happening? Why weren't you blocking that driveway? And they shouldn't have been able to get out of this state without you going and negotiating. I think that the Democrats see Ormet in much the same way that Governor Kasich saw NCR back then.
NCR moved its headquarters to Atlanta from the Dayton area, and many people lost their job. Also, DHL left Wilmington during the time of right around Ted Strickland's administration. This is Jackie Borcher. This could be, I can see the ads. They're going to be similar to the Bain Capital ads that Mitt Romney faced during the presidential election in 2012. It feeds to that number that we mentioned earlier about that John Kasich is less interested in folks like me and more in touch with the rich. That's going to be the narrative that they're going to try to use with this situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Chrissy said, you know, they probably already taped a whole bunch of footage for that. And I think, this situation is pretty complicated. And, you know, some people say it just came down to the governor could have gone to his appointees on the PUCO and asked for some help. But then along that line, do you really want the governor to be able to go and control a board that's supposed to be independent? It seems like, I think it can be an effective campaign tool, but again, you have to keep it simple. And the way that's going to happen is by having workers telling their stories of how they lost their jobs and if only John Kasich had stepped in. And I think you're going to see the other side counter or ignore that issue and say, look at all these jobs that we have generated or have kept here. Because there's also a whole list of companies that apparently, you know, have said that they were thinking about moving out and of the state of Ohio and decided to stay. And, they're going to put Kasich's stamp on that. And as far as looking out for, the less fortunate Ohioans among us, you know, they can always bring out Medicaid expansion and money for food banks and a number of things. And I think we will hear a little bit about that tonight as well.
The other plant that Kasich is going to use is the one in near Dayton, in Moraine, the GM plant,
right,
which is now they're going to replace all the jobs that were lost there. But a Chinese auto manufacturer, auto parts manufacturer, is going to set up shop in there. And that's, 800 jobs or something like that.
That's huge for that area. Mm-hmm. To see that plant go away, it was awful. Mm-hmm. And then it is huge for that area. And I think tonight, too, in addition to that, I think I'm going to make another prediction for tonight, and we'll see if I'm right. But I think that we're going to hear another jobs announcement. I think that I'm guessing that the governor has tucked something into his pocket to show tonight, just kind of the icing on the cake to show that he's the jobs governor and he's bringing jobs back to Ohio. And here's some more for you.
You know, the one other thing we haven't talked about, which will be on my mind tonight and on most political watchers' minds tonight, is obviously Kasich would like to win the 2014 election. But people are continuing to speculate about how much he really would like to win the 2016 presidential election.
Yep.
And will this speech... everyone's going to be looking for anything he says that remotely hints at something presidential, whether he talked about a book a couple weeks ago that got everybody, twittering again, of a thing. So we'll be looking for that.
Yeah, I joked that if he uses a teleprompter tonight, that he's definitely running for president in 2016.
Very presidential.
I don't think the odds are in that favor. But that he ran for president in 2000 where really nobody knew who he was. And now he's possibly going to be a two-term governor in a swing state. Joe Engels, that and Chris Christie's problems, that opens the door for the governor track, the Republican nomination. So people will be watching this around the country to see what he says.
Exactly. I think, you know, he has been talked about in national publications by national pundits as a contender. And I think that's why we see the Democrats going after him on things, especially like the OD&R scandal. If you look at the way the Democrats are trying to paint that, they're trying to paint that in much the same way that Chris Christie's gate problem, the traffic gate or whatever.
Fort Lee Bridge.
Yeah,
George Washington
the bridge gate. Yeah, they're trying to paint it in the same way. And I think that that's strategic in a way, because they're looking beyond 2014 and saying, hey, look, his prospects aren't that great. He's got the same problem Christie does. You know, that's the way they want to see it.
Thanks, Joe Engels from Ohio Public Radio, Jackie Borchard from the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and Chrissy Thompson from the Cincinnati Inquirer. You can hear John Kasich's State of the State address. Our coverage begins at 7 o'clock tonight here on WOSU 89.7 NPR News, and also on television at on the WOSU Ohio channel. Check your cable listings for that. This has been All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station.